Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
Encore performance. Post-Super Bowl rappers' divorces. Dr. Dre, Mary J. Blige, Eminem, 50 Cent. And although Kanye West was not in the stands, on the stage, he was in the stands, and this is our celebrity divorce for the month of February, the post-Super Bowl rappers' divorces. And we couldn't have a better attorney joining us in Center Ring because she is a millennial attorney and is completely conversant in social media, all of these performers, and can add a dimension to the conversation that only somebody who is a millennial attorney and younger can add, and that is attorney Lamour Mojadahiazad. Lamour, how are you?
I'm doing well, Judith. I'm so happy to be on.
And I'm so happy for you to be here. This is going to be great. And I'm just thrilled that you know so much about all these performers just in general, oh, yeah, even if you weren't an attorney working in the field of divorce. So let's get started because this is going to be a really interesting episode. The first person I want to start with, Lamour, is 50 Cent. Now, 50 Cent was never married, therefore not divorced. But this is a topic I have not brought onto this podcast before, and that is, what do you do when you have children and you're not married? You have obligations, you have child support, and you have custody issues. And this is these are called paternity cases. Please explain what a paternity situation is and what you do with the court when you're not married.
Of course. So paternity cases, we also call them parentage cases. That is exactly what you said. When two people are not married, but they have children together, in the realm of family law, you don't open a divorce petition, you file a parentage action, right? So in these cases, it's really critical for the father to open these types of cases for the most part, because they need to be established as the father in the eyes of the court. Mothers, they've given birth to the child. The court recognizes them as the mom. Law enforcement recognizes them as the mom. If you do not have a court order with your partner and you share children and you call the cops, it's my day. Where's your court order? I don't have one. Well, kid goes to mom. Always in these paternity actions, unless you have gone to court and the court has established paternity in your case. These petitions are used to establish paternity in these cases. So like you said, you have custody issues, visitation, child support, and oftentimes, especially with someone like 50 Cent, I would assume that there are also attorney fee issues.
So I have never heard in my 10 years of being in the family law business, I'm so happy you mentioned this, that if you want court oversight, and you should want court oversight for just the reason you mentioned, it's my day, where's the court order? We don't have one. Okay, goes to mom. I've never heard, but this makes perfect sense, Lamour, that the father should file the petition as the petitioner and mom can be the respondent.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I often, you know, when mothers call about these types of cases, you know, a good attorney will remind them, you have all the power right now. When it comes to the court, you have all the power right now because there is no court. You are the court. You are the mom, right? Unless you come to an agreement outside of court and all of that, then everything's going to fall with mom.
And when I get people in the office filing, it's generally mom. For some reason, dad's not the one who calls me initially.
Mm-hmm. So dads are very scared to just go to court in general. Oftentimes, they're the breadwinner or whatever, you know. So they think, oh God, I'm going to file automatically. Child support's going to be there. And you know, they're right. If you are the breadwinner, when you're filing a divorce action or a paternity action, that child support portion of it is pre-printed in the petition. It's not even a box you check. If there are children, the court is going to order child support unless you agree that there is no child support. So they get very scared about that, right? And I tell parents, if what you are doing works, you don't necessarily need to go to court. But if you want child support and the other parent is not supporting the child financially, you do need to go to court. It's funny. Moms typically, this is what happens. Moms are afraid to go to court for child support because they don't want the other parent to go to court for visitation. And fathers are usually scared to go to court for visitation because they don't want the other parent to ask for child support. Because once you do one, it opens the door to the other.
Right. You can't do one without the other. They're a two-parter. So philosophically, do you feel that if it's amicable, and we'll talk about amicable versus not in this particular situation, paternity, parentage. If it's amicable and their parenting is working and the money is working, you don't really need to involve the court, not even as a safety net to establish parental rights, because that kind of opens the door to other conversation coming from the court? Or can you just open a parentage action merely in the eyes of the court to establish parental relationship and leave it at that?
You can do that. You can absolutely do that. And if you want to do that, I would recommend just memorialize the agreements that you have anyway. If it's amicable, why wouldn't the other parent just sign off on the exact agreements that you have, like you said, as a safety net, right? It would help both parties. It would help the child. It's definitely in the best interest of the child, if the parents are not married, that their agreements are memorialized in some sort of court document, something that's notarized, whatever you want. Obviously, in my opinion, a court order is the best way to do it, and you don't have to go to court for that. But you can also sign a voluntary declaration of parentage in the hospital. So you can also do that and just keep the court out of it completely. But, you know, parents go to court because something's just not working, typically is the case.
Lamour, why? You said a minute ago, why is it in the best interest of the kids that the parental relationship is memorialized?
It's less drama. When you have basically instructions or a guide or literally a schedule you have agreed to, there's no mystery to what's happening. There is a consistent schedule. It's predictable. Everyone knows what's happening on Wednesday at, you know, 5 p.m. for dinner, where you're going to be, where you're sleeping, who you're seeing, what holidays you're spending with which parent, who you're seeing on those holidays. You just want, and the public policy for the court is a consistent, frequent schedule with each parent. That's what the court wants. If there is a reason that falls within the best interest of the child that for that not to happen, different story. But if you're two parents who were never married, but you have a child together, why not just get the court order?
Okay, now let's go to maybe it's not so amicable for a minute. Mm-hmm. It wasn't planned. This is a very short-term relationship. Anything under the umbrella of the parents aren't getting along. So that, do you think, definitely should be a parentage case with court oversight regarding custody, visitation, and support?
It depends. If the child is safer in the custody of one parent, and that drama, them not getting along, the tension, all of that is because either one parent doesn't want to be involved or isn't involved and acting appropriately, I would say if you have the better end of the deal, don't go to court. If you don't, if the other parent is gatekeeping or alienating you, absolutely go to court. If you need the financial help, listen, child support is a whole different even conversation. Some people think, oh, you're working. What does the kid have to do? You know, the kid has money. You have money. You spend the child support on your nails. Court doesn't care. You have to support your kid. If you need the money, get child support. If you don't need the money, get the child support. It's child support.
You know, in the world of normal incomes, Mm-hmm. Normal high five figures, low six figures. I mean, we are talking LA. That's normal mm-hmm. for LA. Mm-hmm. In the world of normal incomes, we've all run the Disso Master so many times. When is an order for child support enough money to vacation on and then pay all of the bills for the kids? I've never seen a lavish amount of money that the payor would really have to be concerned that the money wasn't being spent on the kids' food, shelter, and clothing. That it just, it's so emotional in these family law issues. The logic kind of goes out the window. And I have to just bring people's feet back to the floor sometimes when maybe the payor will share the fear that it's not going to be spent on the kids. I said, well, okay, let's A, look at the amount of money that the Disso Master produced. Let's look at what she's paying for rent, because we have our financial statements, or mortgage, you know, however her, whatever her living costs are. Let's look at how much she's spending on food, this, that, and the other thing. Now let's go back to what you're providing. It doesn't cover any one of these things. So it just goes into, you know, that's how I try and calm people down, because isn't that, that's just, it's a fear, but it's more a way of being connected to the person you don't want to be connected to anymore. Don't you think that's how the payors think about it? The money is like a lifeline that doesn't ever get severed. Your relationship is tied because of that money.
You know, the child support, I usually just hear, he or she is not spending it on the kid. Spousal support is when I hear, I want nothing to do with this person anymore. Mm. You know, because right. the child support, you know, you have to, you right. have, you're dealing with the person for forever. Right. But yeah, spousal support is when I hear, I want no ties to this person. Then do a wage garnishment. You don't have to write the check. Just, it'll just go. Do an auto pay. I don't know what's
wow. That's a really good, proposal there, Lamour. The two dreaded words nobody wants to hear, wage garnishment. Because as I have learned throughout the years, that's kind of like a black mark on your record. If you go to try and get other jobs, I'm told this, you can tell me whether I'm right or wrong, and you have a wage garnishment on your record, that may be problematic for a new employer. Is that a true statement?
I've never heard that. I have heard that it impacts your credit score.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know what, I mean, what does the employer care? They're paying you whatever. And it's just, I don't know, maybe they have to pay something because it's another line item on the paper.
I don't know. And maybe it was in line of a certain type of job that I heard.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. And just to finish up this with 50 Cent, when you actually do have a custody order from the court and it defines who has the children when and how the exchange takes place and all of that, if something goes awry mm-hmm. and one parent says, I'm just not going to give the child back to you. I just don't want to. You know, we're on a trip. I know we were supposed to come back. I'm extending the trip. What is the recourse for the other parent? What do you do and how do you get supported?
You know what I would do and what I do? If you're not coming back from a trip, I will go in ex parte into the court and ask for a DA order for the district attorney to locate the child and bring the child back. That's what I would do. Ooh, a lot of people, contempt, you know, they'll call me, they're coming back 4 days later, right? So that means you have all the information, you know exactly where they are, right? I don't really necessarily need a DA order. You know, the hotel they're at, they're just saying they're coming back 4 days later, right? In those situations, a lot of parents want to file a contempt action against the other parent because they didn't follow the visitation schedule. I tell parents, a contempt action is not getting you more visits. A contempt action takes a lot of money. There's at least two hearings involved. the other parent might get admonished by the court, but that doesn't bring your kid back. So I always, I would do an ex party to bring the kid back by any means necessary. And you know what, Judith, this happened a lot during COVID. I saw a, one of my colleagues had a case and she called me and she said, oh my God, the dad has taken the kid to, I don't know, some other state where he had a farm. And he sent the itinerary for that little vacation with the kid. You know, they each got 14 days a year, but you have to give at least 30 days notice. He just sent her the itinerary. They were already on the plane. Hey, I'm taking my 14 days. Bye. So they had to do an ex party. And you know, in those situations, if you have an attorney, that your attorney, the attorney should call your attorney and say, ball's in your court. What do you want me to do? I'll tell him or her to bring the kid back, because they know they're in the wrong. What are you doing? But a lot of parents did that during COVID. They took their kids to places because, you know, we're in LA. So they didn't, you know, the politics, whatever it is.
Right.
It happened a lot. It wasn't just one colleague who called me with that. It happened a lot. And I saw it too.
Well, I knew somebody who, unmarried, had a child, not a very responsible dad at all, posting pictures of marijuana before it was recreationally legal in California on his Instagram account as a provider, an independent contractor.
On his Instagram?
On his Instagram and Facebook. Yes. So anyway, a couple court things happening, and she got sole legal, that they had to do joint physical, but the whole co-parenting schedule was written out. Well, he had a very large family and some of them were across the border, and so they would go back and forth. And he would not give the child back. The child was maybe 6 years old. He wouldn't give the child back. He was here in LA. He wasn't in another country at that point. She went to the local police station with the court order and said, can you please help me get my child out of the house? The police go to the house with her and they knock on the door and ask him to come out and say, we want to keep this low key. We do not want to upset your son. This is the schedule that the court ordered. You are in violation of it. And so we do need to take your son now and give it to her and would like to do it peacefully so your son doesn't get upset. And so she got her son back. And then, of course, she filed in court since that happened. And he no rights anymore. He had no rights. They took everything.
Oh my God. You know, it also, I tell people this all the time. It also depends on which cop you get when you call.
I didn't some even of them, think about that. How do you mean?
So some of them, they hate domestic calls for visitation. The family law calls, they hate it. They've all told me they hate it. I've spoken to bailiffs who are part-time in the court, part-time at the station, whatever. They hate these calls. They hate them. So unless you have an officer who actually cares, they might say, just like I said. So if the dad says, listen, look at this text message. I have a text message that says, I get the kid till tomorrow. She's just mad. And she's coming here trying to take the kid away because she was mad at me because my girlfriend's over. Right? What will the officer say? I don't care what the text message says. Give her the kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they don't care. They don't care. Even if you have the court order, they'll say, you know, some parents will say, you know, we have missed visitation. They didn't bring them to whatever. And they'll say, you know, I don't know. Go to the house. Let us know if the kid's there. Go ask the other parent. Let us know what happened.
You know what? That makes perfect sense, Lamore, because then I had another client who said to me kind of what you're saying. And that was, I did go to the police station. They would do nothing.
Oh. There we go. They hate these calls. And do you know what they hate more than that? The standbys when we're clearing someone's house because you have to take your personal belongings out, right? We call the sheriff's station and have them just stand by outside. They hate those calls. They hate those calls. It's boring for them.
You know, I can imagine that anything domestic would not be comfortable for anybody to deal with. I can imagine. Okay, let's go to Dr. Dre. Now, we've talked about Dr. Dre on the Celebrity Divorce mm-hmm. series before, mm-hmm. but since he was the one who produced the show and he was the first singer with Snoop Dogg up, let's just do a little recap. The three big issues with Dr. Dre were spousal support to Nicole, where's the prenup? It's a big thing about where's the prenup.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about something that really didn't get discussed in the stories I read, and that was dividing the business. How much of his business was community property, which is huge. So which one do you want to tackle first, prenup, spousal support, or dividing the business?
Oh, I have any of them. We could start with the prenup, makes sense, right? Because yeah. that would have told us if, you know, what
okay.
we're doing with anything.
So where's the prenup? Where yeah. will the prenups be? Like titles to our homes, the biggest assets we have go missing when we need to find them.
Well, you know, the thing with them was they had a copy of the prenup. She just said our copy, the attorneys have copies. She said our copy in a symbolic representation of Dre's love to me. He ripped it up in front of me early in our marriage. He ripped it up and said, this piece of paper means nothing. I will give you whatever, right? That's what she claimed that he did, right? But the attorneys also have to keep original copies, right? We have four originals, good. Which doesn't make any sense. They're not, you can't have four, whatever. But we have four originals, wet signatures, notarized all over the place. The attorneys, each party, whatever. But she says that this happened, which means that the prenup should be invalidated. That's okay. what she said.
Okay. Now, so this is how regular citizens know more law than people in law, supposedly.
Yeah.
All right. So the copies of the prenups are in their respective attorneys' offices.
Should be, yes.
Allegedly, Dr. Dre ripped up a prenup in support of his undying love for Nicole. Does that actually invalidate it? If both parties wanted to invalidate a prenup, isn't there a legal process you go through?
Yeah, and your prenup will have a term that accounts for that. And usually that term is any amendment, any changes to this prenup will be done in writing.
Yep.
I mean, listen, good try. That's a great try. You know, they got married, what? When did they get married?
They got married right before Straight Out of Compton.
So, could you imagine?
Straight Out of Compton was being produced. That's when they were together.
Could you imagine? I won't tell you what I would have done, but there would be no copies of that prenup anywhere. If I were married to Dr. Dre and this money, because when you are, here's one thing about prenups. They can't be unconscionable, right? If you are making $3 million a year, right? I'm making $100,000 a year and we sign a prenup. 30 years go by, we want to get divorced. You are now worth $1 billion. And I stopped working when we got married because you were a millionaire. I don't know what that prenup would have said. That prenup probably says I get what? $5,000 a month in spousal support? That is unconscionable when you think about it now. Unconscionable. That's why they probably had such a huge settlement. She got $50 million now, $50 million in a year from now. Right? He gets the 6 cars, she gets 4, he gets 7 houses, right? And speaking of his businesses, didn't he get, I think he did, the master recordings and all of the Apple stock.
Okay. So do you happen to know whether she got any type of settlement from a community property settlement from the business?
I'm going to guess that $100 million payout is tied into all of that. Yeah, because she also didn't get any spousal support, which is crazy, right? But it makes sense. They had this prenup. We are going to abide by the terms of the prenup, but she fought hard not to. But this $100 million settlement tells me their agreement, I'm sure their judgment says something like in lieu of spousal support, in lieu of, you know, payout for this business that didn't exist and blah, 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 she's getting $100 million.
Right. And the first time I heard about when the settlement is so large that you'll never want for anything the rest of your life versus spousal support, it was with a case I had. It was a $25 million estate. The couple was not arguing at all. He was a financier. And he said, no, we're just going to split everything down the middle. I always make more money. I don't care. And I made sure we had an attorney on board reading through. They didn't want to be represented by attorneys. I said, well, that's fine because you're splitting everything down the middle. But because I'm not an attorney and I'm right. thinking maybe there's some legal language in there that I would never know to put in, some case law references, let's have an attorney be the person that looks this over. And we put him in a mediator capacity so he could work with both people.
Yes.
Because you can't, as an attorney, represent both people.
Right.
And the attorney is the one who taught me. He said he called me up because we were all under a mediation contract so that we could all talk to one another easily. Mm-hmm. And he called me up. He said, listen, I just want to explain to you what went down. The three of us met. And the reason why the spousal support section is closed is because she's walking away with $12.5 million and there's no reason for spousal support. She's fine. And she didn't argue. She was fine.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. What is there to argue about? You're getting $12.5 million. Bye. That's right. What happened with Bezos too. We didn't hear squat about their divorce. Why would we? He's not stupid. This is community property. You didn't have a prenup. Give her half. You're going to be a bajillionaire. Who cares?
He was already a bajillionaire.
He was already. Now he's a whatever. What's the next level of it? I don't even know. Trillionaire.
Okay. You just knocked off Dre in one fell swoop. You dealt with no spousal. The prenup still stands. And she got a payout and probably a portion of it was, you know, part her community portion of the business. So thank you very much, Lamour. Let's go to my girl, Mary J. Blige. Ooh. Didn't she look phenomenal in the Super Bowl show?
Listen. She is a goddess in every sense of the word. And I had chills just watching her. And you know, her music is so, I want to say relatable because her lyrics are crazy. They are so beautiful, but they're still fun. They are so serious, but you can still dance to that. Like she's amazing. And you told me she has a song called Pay My Rent. I think that's what you told me, right?
I'm reading in the trade, rent money. So rent money, her issue. Money. So we have a couple things with Mary J, but the big news was about she had to go back on tour to fulfill the $30,000 a month spousal support award that the court gave her. So with Mary J, it is spousal support we'll talk about for a second, and being a step-parent, and a new twist on best interest of the child. But let's start with the rent. Well, I think it's very funny. Her estate is worth $20 million.
Okay.
Now, who do we know that also talked about being homeless as she was becoming a billionaire during her divorce? Oh, it was Bethany Frankel.
Oh, my God.
From the New York City Housewives. I worked with Bethany. When Bethany was in Los Angeles in the 90s, she was an event planner for Merv Griffin Productions. And I was producing entertainment for events at the time. So I did a number of events with Bethany. And she's marvelous, hard worker, consistently into health, exercise, eating well, consistently into getting married and divorced, or almost getting married and not getting married. She was the runaway bride. I forgot what I was going to say about that.
Homeless.
Oh, homeless. So as she's in the middle of getting divorced, he's living in the big penthouse that we saw on New York City Housewives, and she's finding other places and calling herself homeless. And I'm like, stop, please stop. You have so much money. You could buy five other buildings. Please stop saying you're, and people didn't like that she said that. Nobody minded that she was wealthy. She earned it. She deserves every bit of it, but please don't call yourself homeless. So let's go to Mary J. She has a $20 million estate. Yet she's going on tour to pay the rent. So let's break this down a second. She had a long-term marriage, at least in California terms, it was 12 years. She married a gentleman named Kendu Isaacs, who was her manager. They married in 2003, and I think the divorce was filed for in 2016, finalized in 2018. He originally requested $130,000 a month so that his lifestyle could be supported. The lifestyle, well, you know, no, this is interesting because they work together. So yes, she was the entity that made money, but the managers and the agents are important to the amount of money that an artist can make, because they have to get you the right bookings and keep the image going and help you stay on track, you know. So there's, it's a, I look at it as a two-way street. $130,000 is a lot. So let's start with to continue to live in the manner in which they were accustomed, and you were part of the partnership that created the lifestyle as the manager. How do you process this in court?
Yeah, you know, the interesting part about that is that standard of living was also a huge business expense, right? So now that you're splitting up, the maintenance of the standard of living in two separate houses now is something that people don't understand. You will never be able to do that. I don't care how the law is written and what words they're using. That maintenance looks different, because you're now splitting that income between two people. So it's never going to be the same, right? And I love that you bring up the fact that he was her manager. So I'm sorry, while you're going through the divorce, she also has to find a new manager so she can continue to make money, right? To pay you, to pay her own rent, to continue touring and doing all these other things, right? So it's very... when you are dealing with two people who are working together, it's very, very hard to figure out what the spousal support amount should be. Very, very hard. Because like I said, the dinners at Nobu, they're business meetings. If you work together, absolutely you put that as a business expense.
Gosh, I didn't even think about it that way.
Oh yeah. A lot, especially in LA, you go into court on these spousal support issues, and you have to go through their spending, right? And a lot of the argument is that was a business meeting, that was a business trip, that was a this, that was a that. We're not doing that anymore. That's part of my work. It wasn't part of our marital standard of living, or it was part of our, the dynamic between us as manager and performer.
Wow. And yeah. What about this, these two words, imputed income?
Ooh. So
when you're looking at the to be supported person, and that to be supported person was part of the team that created the wealth that's on the table now, and you're going to be running numbers, talk about what imputed income means.
Oh man. So imputation of income is the idea of get off your ass and work, right? Everyone can work. So if you have a party who is not working, but you are, and they're asking you for spousal support, one argument you can make is impute income to this person. They can at least work at McDonald's. They can at least make minimum wage. So that income that they're not actually earning, put it on them and then figure out the number that they need from me to maintain whatever standard of living and those arguments, right? So for someone like him, especially in a manager role, he probably, I don't know if he did argue this, but a lot of people argue when they're working together, I was never compensated properly because I was her husband. So I didn't even take a salary. We just lived off of, that whole business expense thing, right? So I think when you're talking about imputing income in that type of scenario, she would probably argue, he would be saying, well, I'm not going to be making money anymore because I was her manager. I'm obviously not her manager anymore. I make $0 a month.
But you can be a manager of other people.
Exactly. That would be
my mind was, yes, where the imputed income
That is exactly it. Her argument would be, well, at the very least, you can work at McDonald's, make minimum wage, but really you can go become someone else's manager because you were Mary J. Blige's manager. That is on your resume. Just go get another job on the same level, right? And you impute income when they're not doing that, but they could, right? Yeah. There are opportunities available and they have the ability to work in that capacity, right? So, right. You know, it's such a big argument. Spousal support is so wild, but the argument against that would be, but I'm not actually making that money.
Okay, well, you're not now. So this segues into modification.
Oh.
So can you put a modification sentence, phrase in there so that if the income levels of either party changed, there could be a modification of spousal support?
Right. So instead of going to court for the modification, which is what you would need to do, just put it in the agreement already. Put it in the judgment.
In the settlement agreement, the marital, yeah.
Yes, you could do that and it would be smart to do that. Now, a lot of people don't want to do that because they don't want to disclose their finances to this person, right? Who they've already severed ties with and they've come to an agreement with. They don't want to disclose how much they're making, their reason for whatever modification, you know, a year, 2 years down the line. So it would be smart to do that. And people should do that so you avoid going to court. But a lot of people just don't want to be obligated to disclose their finances to the other party just because the other side might want a modification.
If modification was written into the settlement agreement and the person being paid saw that the career of the former spouse was getting larger and larger, I guess they could go in? No. Let's talk about the ceiling at which spousal support would exist. Because there's a ceiling, right? It's spousal support cannot be paid on an amount of money larger than the largest amount of money earned by that person during the marriage. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do.
So that in and of itself is a ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
So when people come in here, well, okay, I'll pay spousal support, but what if the person paying wins the lottery and makes millions. I said, well, how much do they make during the marriage? Well, the most they ever made was $125,000. I said, this is where you have to get attorney advice, because if I say it, it's called legal advice. Mm-hmm. You have to go to ask an attorney, what are the rules about any ceiling on spousal support? Yes?
Yeah.
Did I learn that correctly?
Yes. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Again, it's a very complicated area of the law because, you know, during the temporary phase prior to the final judgment, you can just plug numbers into the DISO master and it'll give you the temporary spousal support amount. But you can't use that for the permanent amount unless you go into the proposal. It's a whole thing.
I love the DISO master.
It makes life easy. And the, you know, it's funny because when you get that printout, clients are like, I'm sorry, where do I look? Oh, you look in the second column, but it's the seventh line. Don't look at the proposal. Just look, it's complicated. But the spousal support arguments for permanent, what we call permanent spousal support, the amount after judgment or at the time of judgment and beyond is you have to argue. So it's Family Code Section 4320, right? You have to tell the court what the standard of living was. You have to tell the court how much you guys were living off of. Right? So a lot of the times you see celebrities, and actually I'll just say in LA, a lot of the times you just see regular couples.
True.
So they will wait until someone, if they know their partner is about to get a promotion, or if they know a bonus is coming, or if they know some business deal is about to go through because of community property and spousal support and all of that, they'll wait. They'll wait to get separated. They'll wait to file. All
intellectual property rights, the whole thing.
All of it. They'll just wait.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny because I kind of don't believe the reason she had to go on tour was to pay alimony, but who knows? It was an interesting topic to explore once I also read there's a $20 million estate that she has. So maybe she didn't want to tap into her savings. Like, who would, right? Who would?
Yeah.
Okay, let me move into step parenting, because Kendu Isaacs, the former husband, had three children. He had two children to the woman he was married to when he started dating Mary J.
Mary J. What? Yeah.
So, you know, he wasn't yet divorced. He was still married when they fell in love. Okay, it happens. And but then he had a child with somebody else after that. So Mary J. was a step-parent. And that in and of itself is a whole world of learning communication, understanding how to be a parent. Mm-hmm. Do you have any step-parent issues come through your office, Lamore, very often?
So the thing about step-parents in the world of family law, these are the two places where they're potentially involved. One is, I always get the question, my partner is a better parent to our child than the biological parent. How can we terminate the rights of the biological parent so this step parent can adopt the child? My answer, I'm never going to be on the other end of a parental termination request. Bye. I'm not doing it. I'm not interested. No, I will never do it. There are attorneys who will do it, who will try to do it. No, but that's one place where step parents come in and there's a question about something that has.
What is parental termination?
So you can terminate the rights of a parent if certain conditions are satisfied. And one of them is the other parent has not financially supported the child for a period of time.
Okay.
Right? So they'll ask. And listen, sometimes it's maybe that should happen. I just don't want to be responsible for that ever in my life, so I won't do it. But sometimes that should happen. That's what happens in a lot of DCFS cases, right? So that's a question that step-parents always ask. When there's a very involved step-parent, during the consultation, people will ask. That's like, you know, that's their ideal situation. Another time that step-parents are involved or whatever it is when they think that their involvement in the family law case would help. So, you know, they'll come in and they'll say, well, I've observed this, I've observed that, I've observed this, I've observed that. The other parent doesn't do this. Let me, you know, they want to get on the phone with me in place of the parent who's actually hired me to tell me all of these horrible things about the other parent. And I tell them, listen, what you've done is very noble. You've stepped in. Maybe the other parent is a shitty parent. The bio parent is a shitty parent. And you've stepped in. What I cannot do and what does not help your partner is to go to court and say, here is a declaration from the step parent, right? Who says bio dad or mom is a horrible piece of shit. Well, no shit, right? It's one of those situations where, yeah, I understand. They're always there. They're always involved. These family law judges, the only way they see step-parent involvement is, what are you doing? Get out. This is between the biological parents. I want to see how they co-parent. And your job is just to facilitate a good co-parenting relationship and make sure the kid is doing fine.
I had a case that I actually needed help from an attorney because I didn't understand a couple aspects of it. Just putting the petition together, you know, my normal role of filling out a form based on what the client tells you is going on. So two people are married. It's the first marriage for both of them, but mom has two children from two different dads, not married to either of them. The kids were adolescents. The stepdad who was filing for divorce with me really wanted to take care of the girls. He loved the girls.
Wow, okay.
He spent money on the girls. He wanted to continue to spend money on them. Mm-hmm. So when we got to the form that has to list where the children have lived for the past 5 years, mm-hmm. in addition to the petition. So we list the kids on the kids on the petition because the girls were in the step-parent's life more than they actually saw their own fathers. And I wasn't clear about whether they should have been on the petition or not. So that was me not knowing something. Then when we get to the form where the kids have lived the past 5 years, mm-hmm. and on page 2 it asks,
yep,
does anybody have custodial rights over these kids? She says no. Mom says no.
Oh my God.
Mom says no. And I'm like, well, okay then. If there's nothing from any court, from child support services, from any legal entity establishing custodial rights over these children, and they're both sitting in the same meeting, both people mm-hmm. getting divorced. And when she says no, no custodial rights, I'm like, okay. And I go on with the meeting and I file. Now we come to time to sign the judgment package. We have negotiated out the child support. We have written that section. The settlement agreement is done. All the final forms are done. And there is a form called the Child Support Case Registry Form.
Right.
When I got to it, and it talks about, is this the first form you filled out for child support? She stops and says, I can't sign this. And I said, why? What's the matter? She said, well, you know, there are two fathers and there are two separate child support cases. And so I'm accepting child support from both dads. And I said, and you told me in that first meeting when we were filling out these forms that nobody had custodial rights.
Wow.
And she looks at me like a deer caught in the headlight.
Wow.
I said, I don't forget things like this. This is a super important thing. And he still didn't say anything. So I said, this meeting is stopped. You need to go see attorneys, both of you. And your attorneys can call me and tell me what to do to straighten this out. I've never met anybody who didn't tell me this at the beginning.
Right.
People are getting child supports. First thing they talk about, and I'm so sorry, but you put me in a position that I just can't do anything with right now. You need attorneys to straighten it out. They still haven't done anything. This was over 2 years ago.
They need to amend that jurisdiction form.
I know. Thank you. Thank you. I got attorney advice. So why don't you tell our audience what would have been done, what should be done in that case?
Oh my gosh. So in that case, that form that you're talking about is the UCCJEA. It's a jurisdiction form for the court.
Oh, where the children have lived and does anybody else have custody rights?
Yes. Yes. Are there any other cases involving the children? Do you know anyone? I think it actually says who may have rights.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there's also a clause of you're signing this under penalty of perjury.
Right.
Never forget that phrase.
Right, right. So... So that step parent, I'm trying to think of situations where the step parent would even have any rights to visitation or anything. I think what I've done in the past, actually what I know for sure what I've done in the past is those children would not be involved in this petition at all, those stepchildren at all. And what we would do is whatever visitation mom, the other parent, whatever custodial arrangement she has with the other parent, right? Her time, she can divide her time and split her time with this step parent if she so chooses. But I would not include it in the paperwork because the court should not have jurisdiction over these kids with this couple. No. No way.
That's exactly what an attorney told me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was one other thing, and I can't remember. The attorney I sent the husband to, the non-biological mm-hmm. dad, did give him a unique way of moving ahead, but it was very, very complicated and required more court time and filings if non-biological dad really wanted to be in the kid's life. But here's what really went down. This is why everybody in family law has to understand that what you're being told is not exactly what's going on in the background.
Yes, yes.
And we are fooled. We are set up to be fooled by our clients. And you have to decide, you know, what type of any kind of malpractice they may be involving you in simply because they weren't honest with you. Mm-hmm. I don't have malpractice issues because I don't represent anybody, but I have my time and I have my pride in what I do. And I don't want to work with anybody who's not going to tell me the truth. Who knows how you could involve me surreptitiously in anything. So anyway, the motivations were she wanted more child support than what she was already getting, and non-bio dad was ready to pay her more child support. So she was getting child support from the two bio dads, maybe not much, but non-bio dad was up for paying her more, and non-bio dad thought maybe they could get together, and so he was hoping that through this, which is not a horrible thing, through offering, you know, to keep paying. I think he really did love the kids. I actually did get that.
But that's fine. But why do we need to call it child support?
Right. So most attorneys that I talked to said what you said. Amend the petition, get them off the petition because they have no business being on the petition since there are other fathers with open cases.
Yes.
That have already established rights. If non-bio dad wants to give money to mom and give money to the kids and pay for their college, great, do it. And if mom wants to split up her time with non-bio dad, just like you said, great, do it. But yeah, we had to, and then I had to rewrite the, so it really was kind of, and you have to amend a few things before
you finish up.
So that was tough. But yes, just in the world of step parenting, not only does that get complicated if you start being a step parent to an extremely young child that may not really have the awareness to understand bio dad versus my non-bio dad. You're just the dad in the house that I've always grown up with, so you're dad. Yeah. And then some legal thing happens and, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not dad, or maybe both dads will be supporting the children by a legal action. I've heard of that before. Both dads are asked, or did maybe there's a missing piece of information. I don't know for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard. I don't know. I've
never heard that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I'll finish up with Mary J. Blige in best interest of the children, just as a concluding statement. She chose not to have children. Now, she was married, 12, 13 years to Ken Du, but she chose not to have children. Best interest of the not born child, she didn't think she'd be a great mother. She actually said, I have a career. I'm always working. I wouldn't have the time to parent. And so I'm going to choose the career and not bring a child in the world. How can you not respect a decision like that? I mean, how many people do we know that have children and aren't with their children very much because they're working or they're wealthy enough to have nannies? I mean, in LA, a lot of people are
wealthy. I'm with you 100%. I mean, look at her now, $30,000 in spousal. I wonder what the child support would have been. So it was a great decision just all around.
I think so too. I think she had it together. Let's go to Eminem.
Oh.
So with Eminem, he's really fascinating. First of all, just the way he grew up. Mm. He didn't really have a dad. Mm-hmm. You know, dad wasn't around, and then dad died in his 60s. So, you know, dad wasn't around to raise Eminem. Now, that in and of itself will skew somebody to not have their dad right. And then when he did get famous, he didn't really bring his dad in his life, and then his dad died. I only say that to say Eminem has had so many personal issues with women. Not only his mother, his wife Kim, his former wife Kim, but his kids. Mm. He's had so many issues with, he has a couple daughters, so many issues with women. And he married Kim twice, just to give a little rundown. The bones of this case are, they met when they were in high school. She was 13, he was 15. So they met very young. They ended up getting married after she gave birth to, who's the first daughter?
Haley. Famous one, yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, but Haley's famous, but Stevie Lane is right there.
Oh, okay.
Stevie Lane has been on TikTok recently, non-binary, and talking about dad. She thought Eminem was her bio dad, found out he wasn't. Found out she was the daughter of Kim and Kim's former boyfriend when Eminem and Kim were on a break.
Oh my God, these two, they are, as from what I know, or, you know, from his songs, they're as toxic as it comes.
Right. So, you know, there's custody issues. He married twice just to see Kim twice, just to see if it would work the second time. There's adoption stuff going on. He adopted people. Then there is, I don't know about domestic violence, but there is proposed violence as lyrics in his songs about everybody's upset with, starting with Kim and then his daughter. Mm. So there's a lot going on. So which one should we tackle first? Which one of those is the most important issue to you?
The thing about Eminem is, you think about Eminem and you think about his lyrics. You think about his lyrics. They're so jarring and they tell such insane stories. You're just sitting there. You can imagine the violence that he's talking about. I actually made a TikTok about the one album that I think if it were released today, it would be taken off the shelves in a second.
That's Slim Shady?
Yeah, it's the Marshall Mathers LP where he, every single song, why do we even know Haley's name? He talks about Haley. Why do we even know who Kim is? He talks about Kim and killing her.
Yes.
Constantly talking about killing her. And it's, you know, it's one of those stories where you hear, there's no way this guy's going to get custody. Listen to the shit he's saying about the co-parent. What the hell is going on here? And then they were married twice. They're just, you know, now that you say they met when they were 13 and 15, it makes a little bit more sense, but you know, it's just so toxic. And I think they have joint custody of Haley when she was a minor. She's, how old is she? Do you know? Oh, she was born in 95.
I don't think any of them are minors anymore. They're all.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She was born in 95. So just to hear that they had joint custody of her. I mean, listen, Kim had a lot of problems too, from what I've heard. Again, from not even when Eminem was really in his prime within music, we didn't really have, you know, social media like we have now. TMZ wasn't that crazy. Everything wasn't everywhere. We learned about their dirty laundry from his albums, from every single he put out.
So you have a lot of artists that do that. You have Taylor Swift, who always writes about her boyfriends.
Yes.
But she doesn't kill them in her songs. She's, you know, they're regular lovelorn kind of thing.
She doesn't put them in her trunk and drive off.
Right. Kanye, who we're going to talk about in a minute, does put his therapy-driven issues in his songs. And I say that for Eminem. It's like, these songs are therapy to them. And because I used to work with performing artists for most of my life, I do appreciate that through your art, you are communicating. And you're communicating what your experiences are. You're communicating about how you see the world. Mm. And so to your point, Lamour, that his lyrics are very dark. So I opened with how he grew up as a child because I thought that was important to lay the groundwork for the anger that he had and how that anger in all phases of his life, those things that were bothering him, came out in his songs. Mm-hmm. But now you, as a millennial attorney who is very conversant with social media, who understands the impact of social media and then the impact of the lyrics in a song, if you're a singer-songwriter, now you're getting divorced, now you're asking for custody, while your soon-to-be ex-wife is suing you for $10 million because yeah. of the distress that you put her in with the lyrics in your song. So we're transferring this to other people now. So let's just talk about, and you can we can bring in Kanye West's references at the same time. Social media, the use of social media in general, if you want to describe somebody or something in the pejorative, and then what you need to do with that when you're getting divorced, how do you need to deal with that?
So with social media, so I think one thing everyone, not just parents who are in the midst of a divorce or custody battle, needs to remember is that the internet lives on forever. I don't care if you're doing what Kanye does, you post and delete. It's still there. People are taking screenshots, they're taking screen recordings. I made a video about how Kanye West ruined Super Bowl weekend for the poor legal assistant that's on Kim's side because they had to sit there as he's posting and deleting, screen record, take screenshots of the caption of the post. What is he putting on his stories? What is he commenting? His comment section, right? Because it would potentially help her in court. And I think that a lot of people don't know, you know, I have a private profile. No one's ever going to see this. Let me show that me and my kid are going on vacation. Well, I'm sorry. Anyone can follow you, even if your profile is private, and they can still take screenshots. So you see sometimes parents say, you know, I want the kid to live with me on these days because we have this routine. And then on that day, they're on vacation and we have a screenshot and we go to court with that screenshot. Kanye West, also in his art and in his expression of everything, right? He gives us a front row seat into how his mind works. Like you said, it's his therapy, right? These are basically diary entries, right? Mm-hmm. All of these people. And it's funny because Kanye actually posted an article about Jay-Z recently. And the headline was something about Jay-Z attempting to pass legislation that would stop lyrics from being used against rappers to prove guilt. No, no, no. Your lyrics are like your therapy notes. Your art is an expression of what else is going on or what is going on. It's very important and crucial to these cases to know what these people are thinking and doing and presenting to the world. This is your social media. What are you doing?
You know, you brought up a good point about anything on social media lives forever. Just because you're deleting it from your account doesn't mean other people are deleting it from their account.
Oh.
So answer a question for me because I'm a digital dinosaur. I try my best. So if I delete something from my account, does it get deleted from other people's accounts that are following me?
Yes.
It does get deleted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then how would somebody else hang on to a post that I might be deleting? Can they save it somewhere?
You can just see the screenshot.
Oh, the screenshot.
Judith.
I told you I'm a digital dinosaur.
So on TikTok, I've been posting all of Kanye's deleted posts, and it's gotten to a point where he is posting so often that people are going to my Instagram and messaging me the post the second he posts them in case I miss it. Right? So it's at that level. There are Instagram pages dedicated to Kanye's deleted posts. People are archiving his posts because he's being so insane. Yeah. Yeah. It's a crazy world out there. And you know what? There is, I'm sure, an IT tech would be able to tell you that there is a way to go back into the history. I know that Instagram holds your own archives. Like if you've deleted something, there's a way to go back and see the things that you've, like your own archive.
But maybe if you mistakenly deleted, oh my gosh.
Yeah. They save it for a little bit. But I know in the IT world, there's someone who can find all of your deleted posts. But when you're someone famous, listen, the second you click post, especially, here's another thing in case you didn't know, on Instagram, you can put notifications on for a certain account. So you can go to Kanye's account and post and put the notifications on. So the second he posts, you'll get a banner on your phone. You can go on his page, screenshot it, right? I'm positive that there are thousands of people in the world right now, the second he posts, they take a screenshot because they know now the pattern is I'm going to delete it.
Okay. All right. And he has talked about it's part of his mental health kind of challenges. I want to go back to violence though. Eminem's lyrics and violence. So they are violent. Some of them are very violent, which is you know, ergo the $10 million lawsuit that former wife Kim made. So I know we have free speech. So that's being argued now quite a lot over the last few years. And it always has been argued. But with an artist, with a songwriter, who threatens to hurt somebody in a lyric, is there anything in the law, and maybe it's civil law and out of your jurisdiction as a family law attorney, is there anything that, is there a restraining order that can be gotten from a court that would stop the songwriter from putting violent lyrics about you in future songs?
In future songs. So when you're talking about a restraining order, you have to, there are certain elements to obtaining a restraining order. And one of those is, would a reasonable person be fearful because of what's in these lyrics? Are you fearful? Why is it that you're fearful? What is the context, right? So, you know, in our restraining orders, part of the orders are also that you cannot be in or get in direct contact or indirect contact with the person that you're that who's protected, right? So you could argue that putting anything in your lyrics, if there is a restraining order, that could possibly be construed as you sending a message to the other person.
That's what I was thinking.
Right. Would be a violation, 100%. Let me say this because not to interrupt you, but someone like Eminem, his entire career revolves around songs about Kim. Do you really want a restraining order where he can't talk about you and his music if he's the one paying you and making money off of it? I don't know. That's a whole.
Oh my God. That's a consideration. Okay, wait a minute. What did I want to say about restraining order domestic?
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No. It was, why? I guess the question, I wanted to go to regular people that have Facebook accounts, that have other social media accounts. Now they're getting divorced. That's where I wanted to go. What should people do if they have been ambitious about discussing their very personal lives on their Facebook pages? You know, people do that. And now their personal lives are getting a little dicey. Maybe their spouse is cheating on them. People put this stuff on their Facebook pages. They expose some of the darkest, more difficult times in their personal life. And now you're getting a divorce. How should people behave on their social media accounts once a divorce is in place, if they are prone to vomiting the most personal things about their lives and in anger?
If you're prone to it, delete all of your social media. And before you delete it, untag yourself in any posts or, you know, that are connected to anyone else. You have to delete your social media. If you're prone to doing that, you have to delete it. At the very least, everyone should make every single account private, at the very, very least. But if you're prone to doing that, the best thing you can do for yourself is deactivate all of your accounts. Deactivate them
all. But Lamour, it's so important. All my friends and family want to know what I'm doing and everybody's interested and it's private. So why should I care?
You need to care, because if you're in the middle of a contentious litigation and your social media could somehow impact something that's going on in court, whether it's a credibility issue or where were you, where were the kids, how do you co-parent, whatever, you will save money, number one. if you deactivate your social, because your attorney won't get calls about your social media and it won't be an issue in court because your social media no longer exists. If they want to say, look at what he or she posted 2 years ago, they were drinking at this party and what, that was 2 years ago, I don't care. Anything on their social now? No, they deleted it. Okay, so social's not even a problem. I don't want to hear about their social anymore.
So that's what a judge would say. We're dealing with present time right now.
So if you're prone to it, delete it. If you don't delete it, just expect that a lot of your attorney fee invoices will deal with the BS you're doing on social. A lot of your declarations in court will include screenshots as exhibits. I think people forget. I could take a screenshot and exhibit A can be that screenshot.
Okay, so screenshots of social media do get accepted as exhibits in court.
Yes, they do.
Okay. Was it always that way? Did we evolve to accepting it as it became part of the mainstream of our lives? I'm wondering if, for some reason, I think that we've grown into accepting it, but I may be wrong in court.
We've had to. We've had to. And you know, I tell people sometimes you're at a disadvantage when you hire an attorney who doesn't know these things about social, or if they don't have a legal assistant who knows or whatever it is. If your attorney doesn't know how to turn a Word document into a PDF, you better be the same age as your attorney.
I know how to do all of that. I know how to do. I'm not that bad.
You better be the same age as your attorney so that PDFs don't matter. But if you're a millennial getting divorced, if you're a millennial in a custody battle, you need an attorney who knows how to save a video on TikTok, how to do a screen recording, how to do a screenshot, and how to take a good screenshot. You know, sometimes the caption, you have to click it so you can see all the words in the caption, and that's the screenshot we want, right? They need to know, you know, I need the timestamp on this or that, or how to reveal this or that. If they don't know those things, and those things are going to be issues in your case, you're at a disadvantage, because still in the courtroom, the judges will say, okay, so the kid posted a TikTok. What does that mean? Who can see it?
Oh.
Right? They don't know. They're not really well versed. We are teaching them, right? And the worst thing that can happen in your case in court is that one attorney is teaching the judge something on the record. Like, come on. No.
You know what? Such a good point that in this world of social media, that if you are a young person getting divorced, you really should hire an attorney that understands the language of social media, because it's more than likely going to come into play somewhere, somehow, with a string of evidence or, the evolution of some behavior pattern, something like
that. Oh, absolutely. Judith, people post their new car.
Oh, I have no money, and all of a sudden, there's a new car, right?
Yeah,
I can't afford that much child support.
Mm-hmm.
And she drive up to the court.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not working. Well, why does your business page have 20 new posts? I thought you weren't working.
See, yes, okay.
What are you talking about?
Excellent.
You just did someone's hair yesterday. They posted it in real time. They didn't pay you? Like, what are you talking about?
It is very interesting working in the field of divorce. It really is. When people walk into the office as if this is the first time anybody ever thought about, you know, I'm thinking of cutting back on my hours at work. Now, I do have three children, and my wife has never worked. And I just look at them like, oh, jeez. I don't know what to say first here, but probably a road you don't want to go down.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
With this comment on get off of social media now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're prone to posting like that, get off. I know you're going to mess it up. Just get off. Just get off social.
All right. So we're going to finish with a very social media prone rapper. Although he wasn't in the Super Bowl halftime show, he was part of the recording of the show by cameras that were showing us the stadium, because Kanye West enjoyed a a sufficient amount of camera time at the Super Bowl halftime show with his kids. And he was dancing. So I want to bring up a topic, just like we never talked about parentage before. We've never talked about something that's going on in Kanye and Kim's divorce now, and that's called bifurcation.
So yes.
It's interesting how the media uses language. So I was seeing articles this past week about Kanye West, a Kim Kardashian request to be legally single, and I'm like, but that's called divorce. She's requesting to be legally single, and he's objecting and explaining why he wants to object to her and being legally single. I want to tackle this. The word is, if you are just, this is what people don't know. Everybody thinks, and the normal divorce is, you file for divorce, you work out the settlement agreement, it's documented, and then you finish the whole process and you're divorced and everything's divided and support is assigned, all that jazz. But there's another way of getting divorced. And the word is?
Bifurcation.
Bifurcation. Mm-hmm. Would you please explain what bifurcation is?
Oh, absolutely. So bifurcation is where a request for bifurcation is when you are asking the court to split the issue of marital status from all of the other issues in your case. So you're going to court so that the court can declare you and the other person a single person. You want them to terminate your marital status. However, you know, all the other issues in your case, a property division, custody, all those other things, they're still pending. But you don't want to wait until there's resolution in those issues because they may take a really long time. Right. So one reason is they might just take a really long time. So you just want to be divorced now because this is taking so long. So you would request a bifurcation.
Before we go to why Kanye stated in these articles he's against bifurcation, I just want you to address in general, what are the challenges, Lamour, if a bifurcation is granted? So the divorce is granted, bifurcated, split up, the actual issue of being legally divorced, and we still have all these assets and debts and child support and custody to deal with. What is the challenge in getting the divorce first and then second dealing with all of the settlement issues?
There's no challenge.
No?
No, it's a great, great tool that many people don't know about. You hear about it. Yeah, you hear about it a lot with celebrity divorces. So there's Kanye and Kim, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt did a bifurcation. Dr. Dre and his wife also did a bifurcation. Regular people don't know about bifurcations because I don't know, maybe their attorneys don't know, or it's just too, you know, they don't think about it. They don't think
so. Why in the celebrity cases do they go for bifurcation as frequently as they do?
Typically, it's because they know the other issues are going to take a long, long time to resolve. They're dealing with a lot of money, but they want to be done with the other person as soon as possible.
Okay. And I'm glad you said, and they're dealing with a lot of money. Do they want to make sure that date of separation that had to originally be documented in the petition and the response is not changed at all? Because the date of marriage and the date of separation bookend the community property involvement of the couple, and maybe they want to buy more real estate. Maybe they want to buy some planes. Things like that, and they want to cleanly be divorced before they invest money in large assets. Even though, after date of separation, it's separate property money, what if they get together again and the date of separation is moved?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be. That could be. I think a lot of famous people also do it because they want that headline that says, Brad and Angelina, finally divorced. Dre and Nicole, finally divorced. Kim and Kanye, divorced. And they don't want to look like their divorce is dragging on for 7 years, because it really is. Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt are having property issues right now, right?
But they're actually having property issues? I thought it was just about the custody.
No. So they had a winery together that they bought together. Ah. One of the few properties they bought together was a winery. Okay. And Angelino went to court to lift the ATROs, the automatic temporary restraining orders that prevent her from selling the asset. She went to court to lift that so that she can sell her portion of this winery that she shares with Brad. He agreed that she can do that, but because it's a business, it's not just a house, allegedly some of the terms included him giving a thumbs up or thumbs down to the potential buyer of the business, right?
Well, that may actually, it makes sense. You
absolutely
want to have a little say so in your business.
Absolutely. You're going to be partners with this new person.
Right.
So now, allegedly, Angelina Jolie sold it to a third party competitor of the winery of this company. And what Brad is saying is, you never told me who the potential buyer was. I never, ever agreed that you could sell it to this person. I don't know the terms of the deal. And now I own this winery with this person who is a direct competitor of our wine.
Oh, wow.
I cannot run this business and make money anymore because of what you did, which was in violation of the agreement. Yeah, he's asking the court to undo the deal and he's asking for damages too. And I don't blame him. And I don't know if you heard through the grapevine during their divorce that Angelina just was not a joy to deal with in the whole thing. But, you know, then there were also allegations of Brad and the domestic violence and all that. So,
you know, I interviewed attorney Chris Melcher about the Brad Pitt Angelina Jolie divorce. And it was in what he knew. And again, it's, you know a lot, but you don't know everything. If you're not their attorneys, you just kind of make a few little assumptions. And the cases are just plain old interesting.
Yep.
Excuse me. In case you get something like that back in your office as attorneys, of course, you're going to be interested in the aspects of different cases. And with Angelina and Brad, he was saying, for what he knows about the case, there was one incident of domestic violence, and that was on the plane.
Yep.
And the plane story has been written about, and it's talked about in the mediation when they had hired a private judge. And Chris says, as far as I know, that was the only issue. And he said, and this was the greater point he wanted to make, because people in general do this. Whatever emotions haven't been played out from the marriage to the divorce, they will play out in the divorce. And if there are control issues going on, if there are ego issues going on, that's what you'll see. And it'll almost seem ridiculous. Why are they arguing about this? This is nothing. Everybody's fine with everything. This only happened once. It doesn't matter. Emotions have no logic.
That's exactly right. That's Kanye West.
Okay, so now let's finish with Kanye.
Yeah,
that's let's Kanye. Go back to why is he objecting to the bifurcation?
So he's saying, I will agree to this under these three conditions. One is, if either of them dies, he wants to make sure any money that might be owing to either gets reimbursed. Okay. Fine.
I don't know how that works. How does that work?
Whatever. There's
From their estates.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. The next one is Kanye wants to block Kim from transferring assets out of any trust they created. Okay, she won't do that until you resolve those issues. Fine. I don't see an issue with that. I don't know if the judge will grant these conditions, especially this third one, but
okay, well, hold on before you go to the third one. I want to trust. This is, you just brought up an interesting aspect. So when people have family trusts, they do have to get dissolved once the divorce is over, right? Because you're no longer a family.
They should, right. And I don't see Kim doing that, but he thinks he needs a condition for that. I mean, it's a trust they created together.
Okay, but within the trust are the assets that have to be dealt with in the negotiation for the settlement agreement. So if they're assets that are community, nobody can move them, can they?
No, no, they cannot.
Okay, so that's kind of a moot point. All right, fine.
Yeah, I think my idea, my theory on all of this is he threw these conditions in there to come out and say, look, the judge granted one and two and whatever, just to say, you know,
all right.
Even though these are already rules. Anyway, but number
third
is the most egregious thing I've seen, and I don't think a judge would grant this, but this is what it says. He wants Kim to waive their marital privilege pending a final custody decision. He wants to ensure any communication between the two of them can be part of the court record. He also wants to make sure if Kim remarries, she would waive any spousal privilege between her and her new husband. In other words, he wants to make sure any conversations between her and a new husband as it relates to custody would be fair game in court.
As it refers to custody to his children with
Yes, of course. Yes. To okay. his children.
Okay. So the example that I read, exactly right there, Lamar. So the example I read was Kim is with Pete Davidson now. Mm, I mean, how long that's going to last, but she met Pete when she was doing her Saturday Night Live show, I guess in the fall of last year. They're still dating right now. So if Kim would if they got the bifurcation now, which means she's free to marry, they're both free to marry with the bifurcation, meaning you're divorced while you're talking about your stuff. So she gets married to Pete, and Pete overhears Kanye and Kim having disagreements about the kids. Things are going awry with the children, and maybe he overhears Kanye saying something that could possibly be damaging to Kanye down the road in a custody hearing. So what you just said means that normally there is privilege between a husband and a wife, and
right.
Kanye wants that removed.
Yeah.
So that Pete could be put on the witness stand and be forced to say Kim said something
right.
that was damaging. Okay, that's what the setup would be. If he heard Kim mm-hmm. say something out of turn, untoward, that could
Or
be-
if Kim just told him something about custody, like, you know, I'm going to keep the kids overnight when I'm not supposed to, just to, you know, stick okay. it to him. It's an egregious ask. Okay. To have someone waive privilege just because they want to be divorced now. That's ridiculous. I've never, it's not going to get granted. That's what I know.
Okay. So do we know when the hearing is?
It's March 2nd.
Pardon me?
It's March 2nd.
Oh my God. You are the queen of social media. This is
I'm on it because March 2nd, if that bifurcation is granted, Kim's name, she's also going to get, her name will be restored to Kimberly Noel Kardashian.
Because on the petition, more than likely, she mm-hmm. put on page 3.
Well, I saw.
Restored.
Yes, because I'm a nosy Nancy, I've seen the proposed order. So if the judge signs that order, that'll be her name. Back to
but I mean
Noel Kardashian.
I think that would be expected, just like Chris went back to Kardashian. It left
yes her. Now yes someone commented recently on one of my posts about it that why would she do that, they have four kids and those kids have that last name. Fine, that's fair. I see a lot of people keep their names because they've had this name for 100 years. Yeah, they have four kids, I get it, but everyone knows Kim Kardashian is the mother of those kids. No one, you know, they don't need to have her last name too. It's fine. It's going to be okay.
Right. And who knows if her own children won't change their names on the way to becoming adults because they have unique parents. We'll just
Great point.
Wait a second. Kanye, his name is Ye. We're calling him Kanye, but his
Ye. It's Ye.
Ye. Y-E is Ye.
Yeah. Kanye. So without the con, it's yay.
But Yeezus, oh no, I'm going back to the song, the Yeezus song.
Oh, Yeezus, yeah.
That's why I said that. Hey, I'm a little hipper than you might think.
Yes, you are. I don't doubt that. Look at your hoodie.
That's right. See, I, you know, I try. I try and keep up with the Kardashians as much as I can.
And you do.
Okay, so thank you for that, because we have never talked about bifurcation yet. And I think it's a really interesting thing to talk about. It does get asked of me a handful of times in the past 10 years it's come up. And, you know, I've just said, although I probably can, I don't want to. I see some issues with that, that if I screw things up as a non-attorney. So there are some things I just turn down that I don't do. So I've always turned down doing a bifurcation. Do you think that's wise?
Okay. You know what? I'll tell you something. A request for bifurcation is usually the forms.
That's so just, it?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Yeah, you can probably fit that declaration that says, you know, we've exchanged our PDDs, more than 6 months has passed, all of that. You could probably fit that in the
right
other information section and just do it all on the forms. But if you don't want to touch it, don't do it.
Yeah, I just don't touch things I'm not comfortable with.
Who cares? Yeah, you shouldn't. Who cares?
Because there's always a round two, you know, in a bifurcation, because there's still that stuff. They get, you know, things haven't been resolved. And
Right. And the one of the forms keeps those protections there. So there are maybe 7 different conditions on the form that you just mark, okay. You know, which include number 1 and 2 in different forms of what Kanye is asking. So everything stays the same. Astros are in place. No one can do anything. All we're doing is dissolving marital status. Have an attorney do it. Don't do it.
Thank you. I will continue.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'll continue to work the way I'm comfortable working. Well, I think we've covered everything. Is there anything that you wanted to say about any of these artists that I didn't bring up?
No, that because was great. So, there's so much, and that was so good. No.
So conversant. I know. We really covered a lot, and we actually went an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Thank you for hanging in there, Lamour. I mean, this went like 5 minutes for me, but thank you for doing this.
Of course. I loved it. I always love it. This is great.
Okay. So I'm really reaching out to, I know there's a high demographic of women, 25 to 35, that listen to this podcast, because I was looking at my diagnostics. These are your perfect clients, by the way.
Yes.
So for anybody listening that wants a great attorney, I want Lamour, for you to give your contact information, but especially those of you who are younger, that are used to using social media, that you see some social media posts being problematic to you with your soon-to-be former spouse, or if you are the one posting
right.
things that may not be looked at in your favor, I think Lamour is a great person to call. How do we get in touch with you, Lamour?
Thank you so much. You can reach me by email at lamour@lamourapc.com. So it's LIMOR@LIMORAPC.com. Online on social, I'm at Lawyer Lamour.
And you are in the Beverly Hills area, are you not?
I'm in Century City. Yep.
Century City, handling cases statewide. So thank you so much. I appreciate this.
Thank you.
Thank all of you for listening. I hope this has shed some good light on aspects of your cases that you're living through or that it's coming up. Please share this with your friends. If you're not already subscribed, do so. Everybody we bring on the show is absolutely tops at what they do, and I know that this will advance your knowledge of divorce exponentially. You can reach me, of course, through my email address, judith@theamicabledivorceexpert.com. judith@theamicabledivorceexpert.com. And as always, have an amicable day.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.